Hello, welcome to a brand new episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name is Dan. Thank you for finding us. Thank you for coming back and listening to officially the greatest podcast in the history of the universe. Thank you very much. This week, you can find out about a truly terrifying beast from history. Honestly, perhaps the scariest fish ever. Also, how you can save the world by watching bad telly. And we'll find out what happens if you would fall through the earth. It's honestly one of the best answers to a question I've ever been sent over on Apple Podcasts. Stick around, you will want to hear that in just a sec. Before then, we'll get a lesson from the smartest school outside of the solar system. This is Deep Space High.
Deep Space High, space for all.
Jump into
your
wormhole and travel to Deep Space High. The school is space. But hurry, because lessons are about to begin.
All right, settle down. Let's get started. Hang on, where's Sam?
Sorry I'm late. It was my turn to clean the pets out, and the space ferrets only went and escaped from their cage. It took me ages to round them all up.
Rounding up ferrets? I know the feeling. Okay, we've been looking at the wide range of space jobs you lot could do when you leave school, and finding out that whatever you like, there could be a career in space for you. So, who's next? Dax, do you want to tell us what your favourite lesson is?
I'm the class representative on the Deep Space High School Council. It's a really cool thing, although I'm not sure it sets me up for a career in the stars.
And what is it that you like about being on the school council?
We come up with ideas to make the school the best in the solar system and make sure everyone's happy and feel like they're part of things and help to solve problems too.
What you're describing sounds a lot like citizenship. People working together to make positive differences to the society in which they live. That could be a society as small as a school or as gigantic as a galaxy. And it's something that's been part of space exploration since the very early days. Let me demonstrate. Computer sim, take us to London, January the 27th, 1967. You're witnessing history in the making. The United Kingdom, USA and Russia have just signed a treaty. It's called the Outer Space Treaty. And this incredible agreement states that the exploration and use of outer space shall be carried out for the benefit and in the interests of all nations. It means that, for example, no one country can own a planet.
Not even if they put a flag on it?
Not even then. They also agreed that celestial bodies such as the moon must only be used for peaceful purposes. Today, over 100 countries have now signed the treaty, and working together hasn't stopped there. Computer, Baikonur Cosmodrome, November the 20th, 1998, if you please.
3, 2, 1, we have
liftoff. We're at the launch of the Russian rocket Zarya. It's carrying the first piece of what will be the International Space Station into orbit. The space station is as much a human achievement as it is a technological one. And it was only possible because different countries worked together. By sharing knowledge and work, the United States, Russia, Japan and Canada, along with the European Space Agency, were able to achieve more together than they could do on their own. OK, end sim. People who can organise others to work together, to share knowledge and to find new and better ways to do things are absolutely vital to space exploration. And with space tourism on the horizon, there'll be even more participants and it'll be more vital than ever to ensure as many people as possible can participate and that things are safe and fair for all.
Sounds pretty cool.
So, Sam, might you like to use citizenship skills to help organise the future of space exploration?
I can even organise the space ferrets back into their cages. Not sure it's the career for me.
We'll find something yet. We're out of time now, but let's keep thinking about your favourite lessons and interests, and you'll find space really is for all of us, including you, Sam. All right, class dismissed. Quietly now. Sometimes I think space ferrets might be less trouble than you lot.
Deep Space High, space for all. With support from the UK Space Agency. Find out more at funkidslive.com/space.
Right, it is question time on the show now. This is where you send me science questions to our page over on Apple Podcasts. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly there. Leave your questions at the bottom. I will see it. I will say hello. That's what Wedge is done. There's just a lot of letters. It starts with a W, so I'm going to go with Wedge. Anyway, they're from America. Hello. They ask, what would happen if you made a hole and fell right through the earth? Now, listen closely. This is a pretty detailed answer. And I mean, it's not very nice in places. If you did fall through the earth, it wouldn't take you long. About 0.15 kilometers in, that's 0.002% of the way to the earth's center, you would get hyperoxia, which is when you have so much oxygen that it all gets too much and you can't survive. You would only last 0.15 kilometers of the journey. Then, if you fell even further into the earth, the air around you, the pressure of it, it would just crush you. But what would happen, okay, what would happen if you wore an oxygen tank suit on that was pressure-proof so you could survive all of that? Well, you would get a little bit further, 1.1 kilometres in, which is 0.02% of the way to the centre in the Earth, but then things would get so hot it would get to 320 degrees Kelvin that you would burn pretty much and you can't survive that. Now, let's imagine you have a suit on that would keep you alive. It would keep you alive through all the heat, through all of the oxygen that wants to try and kill you. Well, you would travel down, you would keep going, and you would get faster till you reach 120 miles an hour. Now, at that point, you can't get any faster because the air resistance is so much, it's stopping you from speeding up. Now, at that speed, 120 miles an hour, it would take you 1 week to finally reach the center of the Earth. That's how long you would it would take you, and you're only halfway there. Thing is, you wouldn't really go back out the other side, because now the gravity is behind you, so it's pulling you back towards the core. And in the end, you would just swing back and forward, like a pendulum, towards the middle of the Earth, before finally you'd slow down, you would stop, and you would float in the air in the Earth's core. What a question, what an answer. Thank you so much for that. Right, here we go. Another one. That took us quite a long time, so we're only going to do one more. This is from Jerry, also in America, who asks, why do we feel cold when we have a fever, but our body is hot? Now, when your body is fighting bugs, it makes chemicals which make our brain reset how hot our body needs to be, and it raises it by a lot. It resets what they call the internal thermostat of your body. Now, experts think it does this to make your insides a nastier, more uncomfortable place for germs, so they can't really hang around a long time. Then, when it's reset your inner thermostat to help your brain change the body's temperature, you'll get chills and your muscles tighten, and that makes you hotter. Can't you get your head around that? Thank you so much for the question, Jerry. If you've got something that you want answered on the show, you can fire it over by leaving it as a review over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, we've always known that our stomach was quite important, right? But it turns out it might be even more mind-blowing than we knew. We're going to find out more. Katie Brosnan is the author of Gut Garden, A Journey into the Wonderful World of Your Microbiome. Hello, Katie.
Hello, Dan.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I think we'll start with the obvious question. There's a word in there that has taken me by surprise, not really sure what it is. What is a microbiome?
So the microbiome is the whole ecosystem of microbes that are living inside your gut. So your gut's quite a huge organ. It's from sort of chewing to pooing, really. So you've got this massive area that contains billions of life forms, all of these microbes that are living within your body that are hidden and invisible. So that's what your microbiome is.
Where are these organisms? Where are these, this bacteria and stuff? Where is actually, this might be a really stupid question, where is it actually living in there? Is it in like the walls of the organs? Is it kind of floating around some liquid that's going on? Tell us a bit more about that.
So microbes are everywhere. So they so there's different types, and there'll be different types that live on different areas of your insides. So, for example, in your mouth, you'd have different bacteria that live on the inside of your cheek to different bacteria that live on your teeth. Different microbes have different ways of adjusting to environments and adapting. So you'll find that there's like a big variety, and they're everywhere.
And what do they do? So they make up this incredible ecosystem that we're only just starting to learn about. What is it that they're doing that helps us every single day?
So they have lots of different roles within your body. But I guess one of the main things that is focused on in the book Gut Garden is the fact that your diet can have a role in the types of microbes that you're encouraging in your gut. So you'll find that if you eat lots of fruit and veg, there's actually a lot of bacteria that are living on the surfaces of the fruit and veg and will actually help to break down the fibre that your body cannot digest on its own. One of the biggest benefits of the microbes in your gut is how they're able to digest undigestible fibre, which otherwise you wouldn't be able to sort of break down yourself. So they're really working in partnership with your body.
And what can we do first off just to help that out? If we want more of these, more of this good gut bacteria, what can we do to try and help that?
Well, there's lots of scientists that say that if you sort of eat more fruit and veg, more of this really high fibre rich foods, then you're going to be encouraging those microbes that like to consume those foods. And then as a byproduct, they're actually creating different vitamins. So that's going to sort of help your immune system and help you to fight off different sort of more pathogenic things that might be coming into your body, which is like bad microbes. It's kind of understanding the science behind why it's, you know, you're always told that it's good to eat fruit and veg. But if you look into the science of your microbiome, it explains why it is.
Where do these microbes come from? If you say that if we eat more of fruit and veg, more of this really good stuff, if that promotes more of these microbes to turn up, where are they coming from?
So they are everywhere around you. So they're in the air. They're in they're on anything that you consume. So they're in the liquids that you take in or any food. So they're existing all around you. They're just too tiny for us to be able to see without a microscope, basically.
So you mentioned good bacteria does brilliant things for us, helps break down the fibre, but you also said something about bad bacteria. What is bad bacteria doing that isn't really that good for us?
Well, actually, something that I learned when I was researching the book is that it's really difficult to put microbes into bad and good bacteria or into different categories of just good and bad, because it can just depend on where they're living or how much they're able to reproduce. So as I said before, it's a bit like an ecosystem and all the microbes are in balance with each other. But if they go out of balance, so it might be that they could become out of balance if you, for example, just ate one type of food and you didn't encourage any other sort of microbes to grow because you were just having a quite a limited diet. So that might actually result in one type of microbe growing more than the others. And that imbalance is what could make you ill. So it's not necessarily that they're bad, but if they're out of balance, they could create a problem.
So, so it's like a seesaw, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely perfect sense. So if we have too much of one thing, the ecosystem doesn't know kind of how to deal with it. Now, in the book, because this could be kind of a dry subject, you know, what's going on, how we break down our food. But in the book, you've really brought it to life. Flicking through it now, we learn about all the different microbes in the world, the tardigrades, the rhizobium, there we go. And the pictures are stunning. When you are making a book like this, how do you kind of know where to start, Katie? How do you know where to begin your research, when you're going to start drawing?
This was the first non-fiction book that I've worked on, and I was a bit nervous when I started working on it. My publisher had asked me if I wanted to work on a book about microbes, and I'm not a microbiologist, so I was quite new to this subject area. So the way that I started was I just read as many books as I could find on the subject. And I also listened to radio shows, I watched anything relevant that I could find. As it's quite an emergent subject in science, there were quite a few TV programmes, luckily, that were available. I also spent a few days researching at the British Library, because that's a really great place for learning about any subject area. And I was really lucky to get to visit a museum in Amsterdam called Micropia, and that is an amazing place where it's all of the exhibits are about microbes. So the way that they've presented the information is in such a fun and engaging way. So there's lots of interactive exhibits. For example, there's like a whole body scan where you can see the different microbes that might be living in different places. So that really inspired the angle that I took with the book, because I really wanted the subject, as you say, that could be really dry and hard to engage with, to be much more relevant to a child or an adult. So you can see how it relates to the human body and kind of zooming in and out of this alien, quite alien, hidden, invisible world.
It's amazing, isn't it, that this whole thing's just going on inside us, and it affects everything. Like, we know that microbes tell your brain cells to divide. They have a huge influence on learning, a massive influence on memory as well. Now, you've come to this. This is your first non-fiction book. You're not a scientist. You're an amazing illustrator. What do you think, after doing all this research, what's the most important thing that you learnt along the way?
Oh, wow. So I learned so much working on this book, and I just found it absolutely fascinating subject. One of the most important things, I guess, is challenging the way you think about things. So, as I said before, my brain was wanted me to categorise microbes into good and bad, and it's very easy to do that. Because I think as humans, we like to do that, and we like to put things into categories so we can more easily understand them. But with microbes, there's some that are actually can be good, but also sometimes can be bad. So they can be both. So that was one of the big learning things I took away from working on this book. Yeah.
Amazing. No, thank you so much for telling us all about it. The book is Gut Garden, A Journey into the Wonderful World of Your Microbiome. And you want to keep those things in balance. Katie Brosnan, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
This week's Dangerous Dan, listen up. It's all about a massive armoured fish. The Dunkleosteus was one of the largest and most powerful fish ever. It could eat just about anything in the ocean, even its own kind sometimes. Now, it lived around 370 million years ago. It grew to about 10 metres long, and experts think that it was the apex predator right at the top of its food chain. It's thought to be dark on its back, silvery on its belly, with armoured plates around its head. Armoured plates! Two words that you really don't want to hear on an animal. It was speedy, it was extremely powerful, seriously one to avoid. But here's what's weird. It didn't have teeth, like what we think of as teeth. I mean, it made up for it, because instead it had two long, sharp blades of bone that could crush almost anything. And, it had sympathy for your parents. It was the victim to a proper dad pain. Because the fish would eat anything and it would do it quickly, experts think it probably had a lot of indigestion. It needed some, tummy tablets. Because its fossils often have semi-digested remains of fish inside them. Inside them. They died, like, halfway through their meal. Must have been a tasty treat, though. Come on, that's an amazing danger stand today. The Dunkleosteus, the absolute beast of the prehistoric seas. It's time to catch up with one of our favourite geniuses on the show now, letting us know what's happening inside your body. This is Professor Hallux.
Hallux's Physiology Fix-Up.
Professor!
That's the doorbell again.
Gosh, that's annoying. Just as I was working on my new and improved human heart.
What is it? The new collection of spores and fungi I ordered?
Much more important than that, it's my double pepperoni pizza with extra beetroot. That's the sixth delivery today.
You should put a revolving door in. Might be quicker.
Great idea, Nanobot. In fact, it gives me a great idea for my new heart.
Oh dear, what did I say? I hope it doesn't involve pepperoni.
Inside our heart, we have things called valves, which only open in one direction. Imagine how much faster the blood could whiz round if the valves were evolving. I'll get on the case immediately.
I'm really not sure that's such a great idea. The heart is made the way it is so it can do a very special set of jobs. You can't just change the design of the heart without making sure it'll still be able to do those jobs.
Yes, yes, of course. Physiology is fundamental. Organs and systems in our bodies have a number of jobs to do. And they are able to do all these jobs because of the way they are constructed and the way they work with other parts of the body. But it doesn't mean there isn't room for improvement.
Okay, program your design into the computer and let's see if it hits the target.
I'll do it in a heartbeat. Ha! Do you get it?
Loading physiology file.
Hearts do a number of very important jobs. Job one, oxygen is needed by all the organs and tissue in the body. Hearts receive blood rich with oxygen and pump it around the body.
I think my heart, with its revolving valves, will do a brilliant job.
Physiology fail.
Uh-oh.
Job two, when the oxygen has all been used up, blood returns to the heart and the heart pumps it back to the lungs to be reoxygenated.
Physiology fail.
I don't understand it. Pumping blood is one of the main functions of the heart, and my new invention can pump it in any direction you want. It can pump it this way and that way.
Physiology fail.
And either way, it's a fail. Blood should travel in one direction only, like a racetrack. If it could go backwards, then blood without oxygen could end up back in the organs, and that would make you feel very poorly. Or blood which already has oxygen could end up back in the lungs. Cardio chaos.
I suppose you're right. Well, I might have failed in making a more efficient heart, but there's lots of people who use their knowledge of physiology to get more out of their cardiovascular system.
Marks, set, go.
Athletes. Sometimes they can do simple things to improve their performance. The heart is a muscle, and so the stronger it is, the more powerful it is. So it takes less energy for it to pump all that blood around. Regular exercise helps the heart muscles to grow strong.
And did you know that beetroot on your pizza might help athletes?
Haha, of course! Researchers have found that beetroot has a chemical in it that means the body needs less oxygen than normal to do the same work. Which means muscles won't tire as quickly.
Was that your stomach, Professor?
I'm afraid so. I think I'd better eat my pizza before it goes cold. That rumble's got me thinking about the digestive system. Maybe I could have a crack at designing a turbo tummy.
Just concentrate on your pizza, Professor.
Hallux's Physiology Fixer, with support from the Physiological Society. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
It's time for this week's Science in the News. Antarctica by the South Pole, it's getting 22 new place names to recognise British people who have made a huge help to science in the polar regions. It includes Jonathan Shanklin, who helped co-discover the ozone hole. Also Alistair Fothergill, whose TV shows like Frozen Planet, they've helped more people understand Antarctica. They and 26 other people are getting places on Antarctica named after them. Also, listen to this. Watching a TV show in standard definition, SD, it can help save the world. The UK's Royal Society of Science says watching stuff in HD on a phone makes 8 times more emissions than SD. And on such a small screen, they say you wouldn't really know the difference. So there you go, doing something small can make a big difference to the planet. And also, 2020, this is bad news. 2020 is set to be one of the warmest years on record. The World Meteorological Organization said the Earth continued to get much hotter over the year. It will be one of the top 3 hottest years on record behind 2016 and 2019. It's not a good thing. The most notable bit of heat was in the Siberian Arctic, where temperatures were 5 degrees C higher than normal. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. If you've got a science question, maybe one which you think can top today's how do you fall through the centre of the earth, if you've got something sciencey, leave it as a review for our show, The Fun Kids Science Weekly, over on Apple Podcasts. If you leave 5 stars, it helps me see it, and drop your name as well so I can say hello. While you're on Apple Podcasts, it's one of the best places that you can hear all of our podcasts that we make at Fun Kids. Some are about science, some are about history, some are about Christmas, by the way. That's how you find them. They're on wherever you get your shows from, Google, Spotify. They're on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. You can hear us all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com.